Greetings once again. We're meeting here this evening with Mr. Yair Davidi, who is a Hebrew scholar who has done some wonderful, extensive work on the lost tribes of Israel, and he's the leading authority on this subject in the world. I'm here in Jerusalem, and I looked him up, and he was gracious enough to come and share some of the issues of great importance, which must eventually be addressed as we come to the threshold of the end of this age, when all the 12 tribes will be found, Messiah will return, and the breach of Jeroboam will be healed. So I'm particularly blessed to be able to be with Yair, and Yair, thank you so much for coming in and for sharing.
Thank you, Gavin.
That is a real blessing.
It's a pleasure to be here.
We were discussing before our little break the tribes, and we discussed Zebulun and looked at the connections to Holland there, which seemed to be very clear. Also, we looked at Reuben, which have very strong connections to France, and Yair managed to point out a number of connections here which concur with the spiritual connections that we made from the scriptures, looking at the subject from the point of view of discernment of spirits, which we call discernment of spirits in the Christian tradition, trying to discern the spirit behind character. And there are 12 tribes on the breastplate of the high priest, and in the New Jerusalem when it returns, there are 12 foundations and the 12 gates. In the book of Revelation, there are 12 in the book of Revelation chapter 7. So we know that Messiah is going to return, and he's going to have 12 tribes, and that obviously the lost 10 tribes are not gone forever and not lost forever. So we'll continue on with that along those lines. Yair, do you want to make a brief introduction before we talk further about some of the specific tribes in Europe?
Yes, identification, our tribal identification is only general ones. We believe that within certain areas, where Israelites were to be predominant, we find indications that the particular group of Israelites that were in Nazareth belonged to specific tribal groups, to specific families, clans within these tribes. It doesn't necessarily mean that everyone in that area belongs to that tribe, or that everyone in the area is even of Israelite origin. Mm-hmm. It just means that there's a good chance that is an attribution that can be made.
Yes, and so they actually hold court.
Yes,
they're not 100% of the people there, but they are the prevailing spirit that sets the agenda in the spiritual. The spiritual milieu of the area.
Exactly.
Yes.
And I would also like to point out, if we have a few minutes, in general, the biblical proofs would say that lost tribes will be in the end times, will be in that area, amongst those peoples.
Yes. Yes.
Just use the summary which we have as an appendix to this book, to the tribes, and has a list of biblical, list of biblical proofs, which is also can be seen on our website, britam.org,
yes,
Britam website. Shall I run through the list?
Yeah, right ahead. Yeah.
It says that in the prophecy of Isaiah, the lost tribes in the end times will be at the ends of the earth, at the geographical extremities of the continents. Mm-hmm. This is what it's called by the ends of the earth, Katzei Haaretz. In Hebrew, it says that it repeats that several times in a context referring expressly to the lost tribes of Israel. Mm-hmm. And remember, incidentally, these proofs, you can say that in general they could apply to anyone, or they could be have a general application. So a point which we also insist upon being applied is that we say that not one specific proof, we're not applying one specific proof isolated in itself. Mm-hmm. We're taking a whole list of hundreds of different proofs and looking for one and showing that these all of these proofs, all of these different branches of evidence can only be applicable to certain groups of people and to no one else. It says that the tribes would be in isles, that they would be in peninsulas, that they would be in the Atlantic Ocean area, they would be in the region of Tarshish, which in Isaiah. It mentions that the region of Tarshish, Isaiah 60, and Tarshish refers to historically to Tartessus and the southwest coast of Spain. But in classical terminology and also in rabbinical terminology, it could also apply to the Atlantic Ocean area in general.
Okay, so this is beyond Gibraltar, out in the southwest of Spain, heading up towards...
The whole ocean area, which encompasses the northern Europe, the British Isles, reaching up into North America.
I see.
The Atlantic Ocean. It also says that the lost tribes will be in the west. Isaiah 24:14 and Hosea 1:10. It says that they will be to the northwest of the land of Israel. It says that it will be in the northland, that they will be in the land of Sinim, which we explained to mean Australia. It says that they will be in the best places of the earth, not only at the ends of the earth, but in the best places of the earth, in Isaiah. He emphasizes that, because the end places of the earth, they go to Alaska, portions of the Kamchatka Peninsula, and some very Arctic, the very inhospitable regions, which can also be called geographical extremities of the continents. So Isaiah comes and says there will be ends of the earth and at the layer, and they're in the best parts of thereof. Just to put an emphasis, to put a fine point on this spoof. It says that the Israelites will worship God in the fire, in the fires in the isles of the sea, which in the isles of the west, and historically, also up until recent times, up until a few hundred years ago, throughout the British Isles, they used to light fires on the hilltops. This is what is being referred to as the fires in the Isles of the Sea. It was a way of communication with each other. Yeah. Before they had the telegraphers in the British Isles, used to communicate with each other in ways known from the times of the Celts, from before the Romans were there, in other words, from ancient times. The tradition continued right up into recent period, for instance, when the Armada, Spanish, attempted to invade Britain. The approach of the Armada was relayed all over the British Isles through the lighting of bonfires on the hilltops.
Oh, okay, the bonfire tradition, that was on the hilltops.
It's referred to by Isaiah and in connection with Israel in the last days, or towards the last end age period.
In Isaiah 60.
In Isaiah 24:14. It says the lost tribes will be in Zarephath, in Obadiah, in the book of Obadiah, and it's in the second last verse. Zarephath in the Jewish tradition refers to France, Zarephath, and it also can refer to both France and to Britain, according to rabbinical commentators. It says expressly in the Hebrew Bible. In the Hebrew Bible, it says this first exile, which is of Zarephath. Zarephath, the first exile, in other words, the first exile, meaning the exile of the Lost Ten Tribes, to distinguish it from later exiles of Judah. This first exile of the Lost Ten Tribes, as Drashnish is referring to the Lost Ten Tribes, and also Nachmanides said it refers to the Lost Ten Tribes, who will be in Zarephath, which in the far north and in the west, and in the area, according to Rashi and Abarbanel, the area of France and of Britain.
So Rashi was a very prominent...
one of the greatest scholars, Jewish scholars, the most revered, most respected.
Yes. And so when was Rashi...
around that period of the Middle Ages.
He brought a lot of scholarship into focus and did some writings to bring together a lot of this information as to what happened.
Yes. I was 11-200, and... I was thinking of Nachmanides. Actually, Rashi was earlier, in the early 1100s. It says that they will be the Dormans, Jeremiah. It's actually in Hebrew, Jeremiah 31, chapter 31. He speaks about signs. You shall put signs and waymarks on the paths in which you went, O Virgin of Israel, when you return to these your cities. Okay? It's translated in the King James as way, signs and waymarks. But the Hebrew words which are used, okay, tzionim, temrurim, actually refer to stone monuments, which the commentators describe as dolmens or megaliths, so-called megalithic menhirs. These stone monuments do exist, and they do describe, actually do describe paths of migration from the west to the Middle East.
Oh, so they left these monolithic stone structures as waypoints along the way where they went.
Exactly. Yes. Only scholars, archaeologists date these monuments much earlier than to a very primitive period, long before the Lost Tribes were ever lost. So we disagree with the dating. We say we have proofs that they're mistaken.
Yeah, I think the further you go back, if they're doing carbon dating, the further you go back, the more error you have. Huh? And as you go further back, then error becomes greatly increased. Go ahead here. Yeah, you were talking about waypoints on the way. In relationship to waypoints... I don't know whether this is the time to bring this up, but the word nostrum, watchman, is there something there that can be of value to us in understanding?
You're right. The word nostrum is used in Jeremiah and elsewhere quite frequently in connection with Ephraim, in connection with the Lost Ten Tribes. Mm-hmm. And this word does mean watchman, has a several meanings, does mean watchman, and there are aspects of this use of this word where it implies some type of religious application. Mm-hmm. And in modern Hebrew, present day Hebrew, not seen as a word for Christians.
Yeah, but I asked Orthodox Jewish gentleman here just a few nights ago, I asked him, what does Nazareth mean? He said, Christian. And I said, well, what about the other words? You know, why Nostrum? What does the word really mean? As far as I'm concerned, I didn't see any connection between the word Christian, which means of the Anointed One or the Mashiach, and the Christian. And Nostrum.
No,
I looked it up in the Hebrew, and I didn't see the connection.
No, the connection is it's a modern word.
Okay.
So it comes from the Christian era.
Mm-hmm.
It is there before. But Jeremiah uses what? So how? I don't want to go into this at this stage. At this point, it's quite complicated.
Yes.
Make it very simple. Christians are names after Nazareth, where the Christian Messiah was born in Nazareth. Nazareth in Hebrew. So you get Nazim. In other words, the followers of the Nazarene, of the person from Nazareth, literally. But also has other connotations, has religious connotations, and the subject is actually quite involved, quite complicated, and it's one of our points. But it is used in prophecy, and there are commentators such as the Baba Vanel, who says that the prophet was referring to Christians. We take it to be as an indication that the Lost Ten Tribes, yes, will be practicing a Christian form of religion, they will be termed Nostrim. In the Hebrew that will be used in those days by the Jews. Mm-hmm. And this fits in. It fits in with the passages.
Yes.
You don't have to accept it, but it's at a point worth taking into consideration. Yes. It also says elsewhere that in Isaiah, at the end of Isaiah, it talks about the and elsewhere it talks about the Lost Ten Tribes drinking and also eating pork. It condemns them as being drunkards and eating pork. So whatever, at least they can't be Muslims.
Yeah.
So
the drunkards of Ephraim.
Yes, the drunkards,
of Ephraim.
The drunkards
sounds
of Ephraim.
Sounds like the Aussies to me, doesn't it? Oh, I'm sorry, but Yair and I are both Australian, so we can have a joke about it. But so you're talking about the waypoints, and I got you sidetracked on talking about the watchmen, but you're talking about the waypoints on the way.
There's one of the signs, points of identification we do bring up. the connections with the possible connections in prophecy with Christianity. Mm-hmm. Also, drunkenness is another point we bring up,
yes,
because it does show something. It,
yes,
shows who they cannot be. There must be people who consume alcohol,
yes,
too much of it.
Yeah.
And so that eliminates a certain people, certain portion of the world's population.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And narrows the field down. And so you take all these different groups and narrow the field down and down and down until you only get it to a very specific a very specific candidates, mm-hmm, who fit all of the criteria which we come up with.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a scientific method. You're a scientist, you're a doctor, you know this,
yeah,
this is going correct. This is how they do it.
Yeah? I'm a truth nut like you are. And this is obviously a neglected area. It's intrigued me all my, about half of my Christian life, I suppose. And there had to be some answers, but unfortunately, the more I asked questions, I didn't get any satisfactory answers. But when I came to your website and saw that you'd been writing on it, and I saw that you had some good connections and some good scientific material, I was really encouraged. So, and then to find out that you were a fellow Australian, well, sounds to me like the man from Snowy River trying to bring the wanderers home, doesn't it? And prepared to go down into a deep valley, yeah, and go to places where other people don't want to go, in order to bring them home.
Yes.
And so I bring you that word of encouragement. Yes, go ahead. Yeah.
Says that they were ruler over other peoples. This was a blessing given to Joseph, or yes, unto Israel, yes, in general.
Yes.
Says that
Joseph's blessing was a rather long one, wasn't it, in Genesis?
Yes. They will
possess the gates of their enemies.
Yes, that's another. Gates of the enemies, also as explained by the rabbis, means major strategic points.
Like Gibraltar, the Suez.
Singapore.
Singapore, Hong Kong.
Well, every strategic point, international warfare or strategic point, some said or other, was controlled by Britain, or not Britain, by the US. And now that's what the US has done. The US continues to do it.
Yeah.
The US foreign policy, foreign military policy, as if whether no matter who's in power, no matter what the
Democratic Republic, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, they want it. The American way of conducting themselves is to establish bases all over the world, especially bases close to wherever they have a potential enemy. Mm. They put a base beside him. They want to control his gates.
Yes, the gates of their enemies.
Any gates of their enemies. Could be they have bases. In Libya was an enemy, they have bases.
Yeah.
In Japan they have bases. Now they have bases in Central Asia. And
150,000 along the Euphrates River right now.
Yeah.
US soldiers.
Afghanistan.
And because the gates of Gog are just to the north, right? And there's Putin, who doesn't look like he's all that too friendly. Gog is there. To the north, with a whole lot of yellow cake having gone missing. They've got to control the enemy that couldn't provide nuclear weapons into the hands of the Syrians, the Iranians, the Persians, as they used to be called.
No, they're in Kazakhstan, within Russia itself, their bases.
Yeah, they in fact, the oil companies are up there in Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Soviet Georgia. They're along the Caspian Sea region. They're in their big time in with compounds, with security forces. So yes, they are controlling the gates.
So, and they are the only major power who act in this way. They're only the British and the Americans act in this way, and other powers don't. You have a lot of empires in history.
Yeah, well, the French tried to for a while. Remember, they went to the Eastern Med and they went into Acre, and then. And then they were defeated in the Battle of the Nile.
Yeah. The French tried it, and the Dutch also tried it.
Did the Dutch?
The Dutch, they had Indonesia, they had Ceylon,
yes, yes.
They had different bases, but they had to control New York for a while.
That's
New York,
right.
New Amsterdam.
Was a merchant center. When the Dutch were a merchant power, the merchant superpower in the 1600s, they had New Amsterdam, which is New York. Then when the English-speaking people took over, it became New York.
Exactly. Mm. You know, so these are also Israelite nations. This is also an aspect of proof,
yes,
of our mode of behaviour.
Yeah, and the Germanic the Germans came along North Africa with the Africa Corps, with Rommel, heading toward the Suez Canal, also heading up towards Israel for some purposes that were pretty blatantly evil. So here we have... other tribes that did try it, but no tribes that really succeeded, like the English-speaking people, Ephraim, Manasseh, yeah. As we see.
It says that there will be the battle axe of the Almighty in Zechariah. Mm-hmm. Israel, you are my battle axe. Israel is referred to the battle axe of the Almighty, the prophet Zechariah. And the British were called the policemen of the globe. Now those Americans fulfill that role. The Americans, with the help now and again of Canadians and Australians and related peoples, whenever you have a problem in the world, okay, someone is someone's misbehaving, or there's an international disaster. So very often no one will do anything. But when they do something, so you can put money on, you can be pretty sure that those who are going to do something are going to be Americans, they're going to be British, or they're going to be Australians, or they're going to, all those peoples are going to be prominent in playing. You have a 90% certain that they're going to be in it. Yeah. And if they're not in it, they're going to be behind the scenes, sending other peoples as their proxies to do it.
Yeah. And yet you go to America today and you ask a lot of Americans, you know, should we be in advancing ourselves in the Middle East in the way we do? They said, no, bring all the troops home and let's watch Leave It to Beaver and I Love Lucy. And they have no idea that the world is such a dangerous place, and that there has to be a policing of the world so that goods can cross borders, so those people can enjoy the luxurious life that they enjoy. The gates have to be patrolled in order for goods to cross borders and for there to be peaceful trade and for there to be prosperity. But they don't understand that. Uh-huh.
It says that there will be a light for the Gentiles.
Okay. I wish I had my Bible here, because that's one of my favorite verses about in Isaiah
42.
God says, look, it's a small thing for me to bring back the tribes of Israel, but I will go one better than that. I will be a light to the Goyim and bring my salvation to the ends of the earth. And of course, from our perspective, we see that as the gospel message, and it does do something inside the heart of a man to bring him into a state where he's going to be. He's going to be refreshed in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Mm-hmm. So there's that wonderful inspiration that comes out of Isaiah. This is not going to be just a Jewish thing or a Hebrew thing or lost 10 tribes or an Israel thing. It's going to extend to the ends of the earth.
Another thing which Isaiah says, he says it in Isaiah 11:12 and 11:12 and also in chapter 49, that they will be separate from Judah. The people who said the lost 10 tribes are being reabsorbed in Judah, are part of Judah. Mm-hmm. So the prophets say that especially that the lost tribes of Israel, Ephraim, Joseph, the tribes of Israel, will be separate from Judah. And not only that, in Hosea chapter 1 and also in Isaiah chapter 49, towards the end, he says that it will not be known to Judah. Judah will not know who the lost 10 tribes were, will not be certain who the lost 10 tribes were. In fact, when the lost 10 tribes return, they will not believe that these are their brethren. They say, Judah will say to himself, I was persecuted, I was oppressed, I was alone, I was going from place to place, and where were, and these people didn't help me. Yeah. And who are they coming home now? Yeah. And we get this reaction now sometimes when you talk to Jews. Mm-hmm. So they say, where were they when through all our 2,000 years of persecution and suffering? Yes. Why didn't they help us and so on? So we often say that very often these people did help us. The few people, Gentiles who did help us often did come from those 10 tribes. But even so, the point it does hold. This is a natural reaction.
Yes.
And it was described by Isaiah exactly as it does take place.
The thing is that Europe did not, and Christendom did not have the scriptures. After the Latins took over, after we went to the Roman Caesar and sat down at table with him and made a deal in 325 at the Council of Nicaea, Christianity lost the connection to the book. Now, the House of Judah had the yeshivas, and they had their connection to the Tanakh and to the Torah, but we didn't have anything. We were we were as pagans, and we stayed that way all through the Dark Ages, from the time when the church went to the Roman Caesar, all the way through to about 1200, 1300, when John Wycliffe started to bring the scriptures out to the common man, and then Gutenberg's printing press came in 1450, and then the Reformation shortly afterwards when it came out to the common man. But for all those years, we behaved like pagans because we had no scripture. And that was a terrible, terrible loss, an awful loss, because without the Word of God, where are we? We may as well just disappear into the black forests of Europe and cower looking for hobgoblins and get into paganism just like the rest of the pagans around about, because without the scriptures, we are lost. So, but you can understand how Judah feels. He says, these people didn't help me.
Okay. So that is how Isaiah described Judah reacting.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
Says that they will be linked with the people of Gomer. In Isaiah chapter 1, you know, in chapter 1 and chapter 2, he talks about Gomer.
Yeah.
Hosea talks about
he's
told to take a loose woman and marry her and have children, and then he's told to divorce her and cast out his children. His children are given names, will not have mercy, and dispersed, and not my people. And then they're reconciled, and the names are changed to have the opposite meaning of you will be my people, you will be gathered, and so on. You have mercy will be shown unto you. And it's in black and white that this is talking about the lost young tribes. And then Hosea remains Judah, but Judah shall be faithful with the saints, and Judah will be separate. Hosea emphasizes the fact that he's not talking about Judah. He is talking about the tribes of Israel, the lost tribes of Israel who will be lost, and when they were in the process of them being lost, they will be referred to as Gomer. We also find the name Gomer in Genesis 10 as one of the sons of Japheth. And in tradition, these sons of Japheth become certain nations in Northern Europe. And we find the lost 10 tribes associating with these people. So we say that the whole parable of Hosea is referring to some type of future connection, future association with these northern nations.
This ties
in with all the other evidence which we bring together.
Yes, that's a wonderful story, because it's a poetic story, and it's also a romance. It's a love story about God eventually, even though Gomer is in a slave market, she's purchased for 20 pieces of silver, is it? And she's restored again at the end of the story. But what a magnificent romance that whole book of Hosea is. And to see how it all comes together, with the names being changed back again, that really is wonderful. There's one question, there's one little issue about Gomer which I will mention as a physician. If we get patients occasionally that we cannot deal with, that no matter what we do for them, they just don't seem to get better, or you treat one set of symptoms and they pop up with another set of symptoms, or they come into the hospital and they block up the system with things that you can't deal with and it's probably not all that important. Do you know what the doctors call such patients? Gomers.
Uh-huh.
And so, and the other word for Gomer is get out of my emergency room. Can you imagine that? So there's this idea of somebody who's lost, and in the English tradition we have this poem called The Lady of Shalott. And that, if that isn't a picture of Gomer, that poem, I don't know what is, because she's lost. She's lost her husband, and she's locked up in a castle. She's not at home. There's no mention of... And then Lancelot comes along, the European princes, and she's, oh yes, the European... And she finds her lovers elsewhere other than with her husband that she's forgotten. And it's obviously a picture of Gomer, who has lost her connection to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, And she's out there and she's making love with all these European princes, and then in the process, she's forgetting her true identity. Isn't that something? And you keep seeing that in the literature. The literature is an expression of the heart of a people as they go through. It's in the music, it's in the poetry, in the stories. And if you go through the video store today, you see a guy with a gun and a girl by his side. The prince and Goma, oh yes, I want the man with the power, the man with the big gun, the man with the big sword. But where is her call for the god that she's forgotten? Anyway, I'm sorry, I preached on a little bit. You can carry on here, yeah.
Okay, it says that they will be connected with Kush, who we identify with both Africa and India, and Isaiah. Actually, Isaiah is there, could be understood to be referring to Cyrus. But so that's we say that Cyrus in Isaiah, to some degree, represents the lost tribes of Israel. But that's for another time. It's a more complicated.
Yes, yes.
We're just very quickly going over it. Oh, another point. Another thing we find in names of peoples, similar to Hebrew names.
Mm-hmm.
We find the name of, for instance, the Hebrews were known as Hebrews, Ivri or Iberi. And this was a name also given to the Western Celts, to the inhabitants of Britain in Celtic times, to the Irish, and also to the Celts in Gaul. And this is wherever you find it, this Iber, it's a shrewd name, it's associated with the Celts. And that is actually probably what the Celts did call themselves. Even now we have in Irish, they call themselves Hibernian, from the same root, from Iber.
Eber, as
yeah.
in the Hebrews.
Yes, Eber was what the Celts of Britain apparently called themselves. Celts of Britain and Ireland did refer to, and of Gaul, refer to themselves as Iberi or Hebrewi.
Oh, yes.
And that's another form of the name Hebrew.
Yes, and the son of Eber. Is Eber one of the...
In the Irish legends, also refer to Eber as one of the eponymous ancestors. One of the people gave his name to their descendants. This is a way of explaining how the people got their name by inventing an ancestor with that name. Mm-hmm. The name did exist. Another proof that the name did exist and it was applied to all of the people.
Isn't that something?
Actually, Celt, even now, there's a lot of discussion about it. No one now denies that the word Celt is a modern invention. The Celts never referred to themselves as Celts.
Okay.
It's a modern classification referring to a cultural phenomenon, certain cultural features that they had in common. Mm-hmm. But they did refer to themselves as Eber or Iberi or Hiberi. Which, in other words, in Hebrews, that's what they called themselves.
Yes.
Isaac, so he's in Hebrew Yitzhak, and so we find through connections with this name and different names that the Scythians and the Saxons gave to themselves, which is a bit complicated one going to it now because it needs a little bit of linguistic. Linguistic.
I've heard of Saxons related to Isaac's sons or something.
Yeah. No, but it's not so simple, but there is a definite connection in a linguistic sense.
Yes.
We also, Jacob, the Austin tribes referred to as the tribes of Jacob. American is called a Yank. Yank in Yiddish and also in Hebrew, in Western Hebrew, it means Jack. It's short for Jack. Jack is short for, is another form of Jacob. Yank means Jack or Jacob. The Scotch are called nicknamed Jock.
Yes.
We have the Union Jack.
Yes. We never know what that meant. Union Jack.
No, they explained that it probably means, comes from James, King James. Under King James, the crowns of Scotland and Britain were united, and the flag represents that. So it's the Union under Jack, under James. It doesn't really matter how the name came about. We say that the name stuck, and divine providence had a hand in giving that name to these people, or to the symbol of these people.
Yes.
We also Joseph was referred to as a bull. Ephraim is nicknamed a bull.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
yeah.
Ephraim?
Yeah, Ephraim, yeah. In Jeremiah 31:18.
Yes.
And also in Deuteronomy 38:17, we have John Bull, a nickname for Britain. We also have the name Ephraim. In Jeremiah, it's referred to as an aigli, an eagle. An eagle means a bull calf in Hebrew. Mm-hmm. A young bull, eagle. Jeremiah refers to Ephraim as an eagle. Mm-hmm. Also Rashi, who we mentioned before, the famous commentator, he emphasized the fact that an eagle is a nickname for Ephraim. Eagle was another, in England, is named after the Angles. Angleland was the original name for England. On the continent, before the Angles and Saxons invaded from Germany, from Holland, from the northern Europe, invaded Britain, they were also referred to as Eagle. Eagle is another form of the name Angle. Not only that, in Hebrew, in different types of Hebrew, the word Eagle actually can be pronounced close to angle. It has an I and it has a sound like angle, angle, angle when you write. So it comes when you're writing it down or putting it in Western forms, it comes very close to angle.
So Anglia?
Actually means the land or the bull calf. The bull calf, according land of it, and the bull calf, according to Jeremiah, is a nickname for Ephraim.
Because he had a propensity toward calves, didn't he? The golden, the calf, the
yes.
And the calf in the south.
Yeah, exactly.
And
yeah.
Maybe today, with the bull in our stock market, a real love for the bull and the calf, and going all the way back to the golden calf. So there's this connection that just goes on.
Exactly. Yeah. And also we have the name Brit Am in Isaiah, so in Isaiah 42 and in Isaiah 49, Brit Am is a name especially applying to the lost tribes of Israel. It's translated in the King James as confederate or company of people. But in Hebrew, company of people. In Hebrew, Brit means
Brit means covenant, right?
A covenant, and Am means people, so a covenant
so
of
a
people.
Covenant of the people.
And we have the Britain.
Yeah,
Britain and Brit Am is very close. Mm-hmm. And also, in the Middle Ages, the very name Britannia was sometimes spelt Britannia. In other words, a variant of the name Britain.
Okay, so it's an ancient name.
Yes, it's quite old. It goes back some time. We also find that in the book of Numbers, and in the book of Genesis, says that Jacob went down into Egypt. He had 70 sons with him. Afterwards, when they came out of Egypt, he mentions the there's a list of all the tribes which came out with their families, and there's 70 families. And these families we later find within the book of Kings and the book of, and also in the book of Chronicles, we find that these clans have become full-fledged units in their own right. And we later, wherever we trace lost tribes, we find the names of these clans given to actual peoples.
Yes.
And just quickly get back, slight diversion, to give an example, an illustration, which is leading into what you mentioned, and tribal identifications. Mm-hmm. One of the groups we identify with the tribe of Israel is Sweden. We say that Sweden is, in Sweden, the tribe of Gad is dominates. Okay?
Yeah, in Sweden.
Yes,
Gad,
Sweden.
Gad. What about the prophecy to Gad from the blessing given to Gad by his father Jacob? Gad, a troop shall overcome him, but he shall overcome at the last, in relationship to modern history. My personal leaning would be towards Germany for Gad.
No, we say Gad is Sweden. We identify Gad is Sweden because the Gad in Hebrew can be pronounced the same as Goth.
Okay.
Goth. Goth in ancient biblical Hebrew, the word Gad can be pronounced the same as Goth.
Mm-hmm.
The word translated, the sound translated as can be in some dialects is pronounced as O, and then an accented V Dalit becomes a thief sound. So we have Goth, the Goths and the Suyons and the Suivia, the two peoples who gave their name, who created Sweden when they united with the nation of nation. The nation of Sweden became an entity. The Suir, also known as Suiyons, one of the sons of Gad, was known as Shiyon, or in Northern Hebrew, Suiyon, which is similar to Suiyon. And we also have another son of Gad was the Areli.
Yes.
The Areli, we have the Hurls, the Heruli in Scandinavia, and also especially in Sweden. And we have also another son of Gad was the Arodi, and we have the Herudi, both in Scandinavia, Norway, throughout Scandinavia, also another connected with the Goths.
I see.
So we have all of the sons of Gad have names which are significant in Scandinavian history, and often connected with Sweden. So this is another. And then it says I'm bringing Sweden as an illustration because it fits in very nicely and it's very simple. But actually, all of the names of these tribal clans, we find similar names in Western nations, and very often, as in Sweden, we find them concentrated, localized in general areas, who fit in with their tribal identifications from other points of view. We have national characteristics. As Ephraim had certain characteristics, and Manasseh had certain characteristics.
And Simeon, and instruments of cruelty, Simeon Leva.
Instruments of violence.
Instruments of cruelty or violence are in thy habitation. Oh, my soul, go not in. And because of what happened at Shechem when they, after the rape of Dinah, what they did. The cruelty element. And at the same time, Simeon means hearing, I believe. He hears, and then there's a certain zeal that comes. Is there some connection with any of the particular European countries with Simeon that you've noticed here?
Yes, we tend to identify Simeon with the elements amongst so-called Celts in Brittany, in Western France, in Wales, and especially in Ireland. And that's getting back to what you said, the tools of cruelty in their hands.
Yeah.
So we find... we find in the Irish who went to North America, they came in several little cities, they came to dominate the police forces. So this is an explanation for allegations of police brutality in these areas.
What about Simeon's relationship to Spain as a potential candidate for a connection there?
No, we do not consider Spain as an Israelite nation, even though Israelites were, and both people from Israelites and many from Judah were in Spain.
Yeah, the Moors came up in Spain for a period of time.
But they do not. We do not consider them. Do not consider Spain a nation in which Israelite characteristics were predominant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I sort of thought perhaps there might have been a connection there with Simeon and Spain. Cortez, Pizarro, and at the same time this hearing, this idea of hearing, and then having this zeal to go forth and do things, that characteristic, Spanish characteristic, of tremendous cavalier attitude of hearing and zeal, and let's go forward and do that. They were the first to go across the Atlantic to the...
Okay, so there may have been Israelites amongst them, or other people. Also, they may have been descended from Edom. There may have been elements of Esau amongst them. We also should remember that Esau was also destined to become a great nation, to be a warrior people.
Mm-hmm.
And the acts, the cruelty for which the Spanish conquistadors were noted, I would say, is more pertinent to Edom, to an element of Esau amongst them. Then of Jacob, who is characterized more by compassion and mercy.
Yes.
And right. These are
nurturing, like Jacob, and Esau. We saw their character when Jacob crossed the river and wrestled with the angel, and then they met with Esau, and they had some sort of reconciliation. Esau says, let's ride, and let's head on back. And Jacob said, look, I've got to take care of my family and my flocks, my little ones. If I rush them, they'll die. So he showed his nurturing character at that point, and of course, way back at the beginning, because Esau was a hunter. He was a take-you-down sort of a guy, you know, a hustler. He was if Esau is out of the nations, it's possible that he may have been scattered just like the Israelites, perhaps, eh? In the rich countries.
Everything is possible, but we concentrate more on what the Bible says than what the Bible says especially concerning Israel. Mm-hmm. Israel, the sense of Israel, yes. Of Judah and of Joseph.
Yes. Yes. And can we touch on the tribe of Asher? Yeah. Have you got any...
So Asher is actually one of the most difficult tribes for us to hone down to any specific mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. Tentatively, we have suggested Scotland, mm-hmm. especially in lowland Scotland. We identify descendants of Asher with the Vandals, mm-hmm. actually the Vandals who marched together with the Goths. Mm-hmm. And we suggested, this was in our book, the tribes, we brought some evidence to that degree that when the Angles and Saxons invaded Britain, those who went to the north, into northern England, and also into merged with the inhabitants of lowland Scotland, that they were actually Vandals. And some of the Vandal tribes, sub-tribes, had a name similar to the sons of the children of Asher, such as Beria, and so on, and Hesui, and others. And the lowland Scotch, or that area, or the Scotch in general, have certain aspects of pertaining to Asher. We also find elements from Asher in Scandinavia. That's what we suggested. That is the identification that we made. Mm-hmm. But I only wish it was stronger, as strong for the case of Asher was as strong as it is for some of the other tribes.
Yes. From a discernment of spirits point of view, I've sort of wondered about Asher too. One thought that I had was that it says Asher's foot shall be dipped in oil, and that he has a certain spiritual character of being an anointed guy. He's just naturally ebullient and enthusiastic. I was thinking in terms of Italy. The oil, the enthusiasm, the opera, you'd think that the man was you'd think that the whole nation was anointed with this wonderful enthusiasm. Whereas we in the English-speaking world are so, you know, so severe and taciturn and down in the mouth about things, and reading the copy of the Times, you know. Whereas Asher, if he is got this anointed characteristic, it would seem to be from a discernment of spirits point of view, something that might be connected to Italy. But I guess it's speculation here, and if we don't have anything further.
Regarding Italy, we say that we know, the history does show that groups that we identify as being Israelites were in Italy and moved out of it. Also, many Jews, many of Judah were assimilated amongst the Italians. Mm-hmm. They fled there after the expulsion from Spain. They were in different lived in different Italian cities and intermarried with the people there. But at all events, we identified the Israelites on a whole in Italy with their descendants of Judah. But we do not consider Italy in its generality as an Israelite nation, because we do not consider it. Our understanding is not, it does not fulfill the criteria. It's not indicated by the Bible and has not got Israelite characteristics. Yeah. Referring the oil, being anointed with oil. Mm. So that's an interesting point. There was an American millionaire, American prospector for oil, who applied the verse to the finding on petroleum. Mm-hmm. And the portion of Asher was in biblical times was from Haifa to the north, along the northern coast, northwest coast of Israel, moving up into Lebanon. So he thought he was looking for petroleum oil off the coast of that area. And he claimed that he did make some findings. What happened in the end, I'm not sure. Maybe we'll hear more of it in the future. But I would have brought with the petroleum oil resource were found off the coast of Scotland, between Scotland and Norway.
The North Sea oil.
Yeah. So this could be applied to Asher being in those areas, as we have suggested.
Are there any other European national groups that you've got some firm, solid connections? We've mentioned Holland with Zebulon, Ruben with France, and we're sort of looking at the
Denmark, others. Dan, we mentioned.
Dan, yes.
And Norway, and Naftali, we identify Norway with Naftali. Naftali.
Now, what's the connection there, is it?
So we have sons of Naftali, similar to groups which settled in Norway. And also there was a group known as the Naftalite Huns, who were associated with the Khuzars, actually, in Central Asia. And they disappeared from history very suddenly, at the very 700s CE, at a very late date. Mm-hmm. Disappeared from history, and at the very time when in Norway, there reappeared an incursion of a large number of newcomers, mm-hmm, with similar accoutrements and jewelry, mm-hmm, to that which had been known from the area of the Naftalite Huns. So, taking this and other points together, we identify Naftali with Norway.
That Naftali, I've wondered about. I've had no real.
And
even speculative thoughts.
And another point we bring into focus, we take the geographical locations, mm-hmm, relative locations, one to another, as a proof of historical identification. Mm-hmm. For instance, we have here. Incidentally, this is a map. You have here a map, ends of the earth, where we see Israelite nations located in the geographical extremities.
Yes, and on this map, we're not showing it right now, but it's basically, we're looking at Canada up to the Arctic, South Africa down at the ends of the earth, Australia, of course, well, that's the end of the earth real well.
New Zealand?
New Zealand, and then out to...
only the black areas.
Yes.
These are the ends of the earth, and these are the best places of the earth. When you take the two points together,
yes,
with all the points, as we repeat, all the points we mentioned have to be taken as one whole, where if any one of them is lacking, it cannot really be applied.
Yes, yes.
It eliminates the others.
Yes.
We have the tribes grouped around the tabernacle in the desert, mm-hmm, and this is similar to the identifications which we have made of historical connections between those peoples, which is quite somewhat complicated and involved, and we can go into it at another time. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about tribal positioning. This is how the tribes were approximately related in relation to each other in the biblical period, when they're in the land of Israel, after Joshua, divided the land up.
From Asher to the north, to Simeon down in the south.
Okay.
Most of us have that picture in the back of our Bibles.
Yes.
And the half-tribe of Manasseh.
On both sides of the Jordan. On the east
Reuben
of the Jordan.
And Gad on the east side of the Jordan.
Yes. So if you take the identifications which we have made, mm-hmm, and you apply them to a map of Israel, of Western Europe, mm-hmm, you get a similar configuration. I'll just show you.
Okay, well, let me just bring the camera over here, yeah, and then we can get you to point that out. Okay, could you just restate that one more time here? Yeah, I'm focusing on the...
We wanted to mention
Gad,
that.
Gad to the east of the Jordan River.
Yes.
And the half-tribe of Manasseh and the other...
In both sides of the Jordan, you had Manasseh. And then you had Reuben,
Reuben down to the south of Gad, on the east side of the Jordan, yes.
So in the northwest you had Asher, and you had a portion of Dan, and also, and after Asher you had further out, after south of Asher you had Naphtali, followed by Zvulun, Issachar, Manasseh on the east side, Ephraim, the southern portion of Dan, Benjamin, Judah, and Shimeon.
Okay. And what were you saying about the...
About the Germans?
About the German connection.
We just wanted to say that Lost in Tribes who moved to the west, all of them moved through Germany and moved through Central Europe. Mm-hmm. And we have... And most of them moved westward. Many there was a great number who remained in Germany, who remained in the east. And they, more to a great degree, as the situation prevailed throughout the world at that time before the modern era, they more or less remained isolated from their neighbours, did not need to mix very much, and remained a separate people. Later, in the 1700s and 1800s and early 1900s, they moved from Europe. All Israelites, most Israelites in Central Europe, moved to North America. And they were separate, they were different. Those who moved to North America were often different. In many ways, it's also been proved physically different. They had different physical characteristics, also different sociological characteristics, and often different values, religious and political values from their neighbors. They were different people, and they separated themselves out and moved to the west, move further westward, and this was a symptom of a homing instinct, mm-hmm. of Israelite peoples regathering together, reconverging together,
yes.
as a preparation for the Messianic age, which God willing will come quite shortly.
What about the Mennonites and the Amish being Germanic? Is that the same sort of thing?
That's the same thing. That is just a symptomatic of what we were saying. Getting back to this, perhaps you would like to, we were saying concerning, now we have the tribes of Israel in the biblical times, in the land of Israel, as they were apportioned. Remember the quick identifications that we made of Israelite tribes being identified with Western peoples. We said that Gad was Goth, was in Sweden, Naphtali, Norway, Dan, Denmark, and Simeon, Ireland, and so on. So we find that a similar when we place all these names on the map of Europe, in the light of the studies which we have done, we find a similar configuration in relation one to the other, one south of the other, one to the east and west of the other, as they had in the biblical period. As if there was a divine purpose behind where they would be related, where they would settle, and how they would be apportioned in comparison each to another. So we see that the lost 10 tribes did eventually converge on Western nations, and their descendants today are to be found in those nations, or predominantly within those nations. And that this is how the Almighty God wanted things to be, how it was predicted through his prophets that it would be in the end times, how we find that it is. And we see that our task is to reveal this knowledge, to do this research, to let the world know about this ancestral identification of theirs, because this ancestral identification, your ancestry, when you are part of Israel, your ancestry obligates you to behave in a certain way, to take certain attitudes towards yourself, towards your fellow, your family, towards your country you live in, and towards other countries.
And towards the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob.
And towards the Jews, and children of Israel, and to be a...
Judah is going to be recognized as the royal house by Joseph. And that's happening right now, because I recognize the house of Judah.
That's right.
And I understand that anti-Semitism, basically a raging of nation against the royal house of Judah, in which is found the throne of David. They hate that. And that's why they're coming against Israel. They're trying to undermine Israel. That's why they're defacing cemeteries. That's why they hate the Jews, because of the throne of David. That's That's my little bit.
You could say that the Bible is the Zionist Manifesto. The Zionist Manifesto is the Bible.
Yes, that's right. And there's no question that that's our responsibility to lift up Israel at this point. And
it's
that's what,
it's what God wants of us. We should realize that we'd face up to it, and our work is helping. We believe that our work is designed. Our work should, God willing, help people to come to this realization.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, this has been wonderful tonight, and I'm looking forward to meeting with you again in another couple of nights, and hopefully I can get some more people to come around and buy some of your books.
Okay.
And once again, this is Yair's first book. That was the first one.
Yes,
wasn't it? The Tribes. And he has the other one here on Joseph, which I'm looking forward to reading. And then this one, Origin, he considers a good introduction. So we're going to meet again in another couple of days to resume this series of programs discussing a very important subject with Mr. Yair Davidi, the foremost authority on the Lost Tribes, and to be able to present this story to you from Jerusalem is a rare and wonderful privilege, and I thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
God be with you, and God bless Israel.
Yeah, thank you. God bless all of us, all these Israelite
people.
God
be with us all. It's been... let me turn it off here. Yeah, we'll chat on.